everyone. I'm Amanda Balby, Managing Editor at Consultant360.com. Primary care providers may treat numerous patients per day who present with dermatologic manifestations, which can have various etiologies. And misdiagnosing a patient may have a high cost. With us today to discuss acne treatment and management for primary care is Dr. Julie C. Harper, who is a dermatologist at the Dermatology and Skin Care Center of Birmingham in Alabama. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Harper.
Thank you, Amanda.
So to start, what are some etiologies for acne?
So there are four factors that work together to cause acne. And the four are inflammation, excess sebum, plugging of the hair follicle, and then the presence and the activity of the bacteria, Propionibacterium acnes. And we spend a lot of time in the acne world trying to decide which one of those things comes first. And we think right now with the information that we have that it's probably inflammation, although most people don't start to get acne until they've also got some activity of the sebaceous gland. So sebum is also really important early on. I think one of the important takeaways here is the one that is not first is bacteria. And that's really, really important because a lot of times the first treatment we want to reach for is an antibiotic. So yes, bacteria play a role in this, but it's not a primary role and it should not be a primary target of treatment.
And what current treatments are available?
There are lots of different treatments available to treat acne. There are many topical treatments. In the topical category, we have our topical retinoids, which are still a real mainstay of treatment. We like to use those in most people first line because they're both anti-inflammatory and they have an effect on the plugging of the follicle. We also like to use them throughout treatment and even as maintenance treatment once people are better. So retinoids, topical retinoids, are a real cornerstone of treating acne. We also have topical benzoyl peroxide, which has been around for a really long time, but it's a really, really effective product in acne. Topical benzoyl peroxide is antimicrobial. That's probably its key way of working. And one thing important about benzoyl peroxide is you cannot get resistance to the way it works. And so in this day and age where we're really concerned about antibiotic resistance, you can still safely use benzoyl peroxide. We also have topical antibiotics. And these topical antibiotics are effective, but they really shouldn't be used alone.
So I know you'll be talking about other treatments that are available, including antibiotics, but can you talk a little bit about light therapy? Is there any validity to that treatment?
Maybe. It's not a primary treatment for acne.
Mm-hmm.
So light treatments are, we recently worked on the American Academy of Dermatology guidelines for the management of acne. And as a take home, light therapy might be beneficial to some people, but we don't have a lot of substantial evidence to really make it a key part of treatment. There's different kinds of light treatment. You can use visible light in the red wavelength spectrum. We can do visible light in the blue wavelength spectrum. We can do something called photodynamic therapy. But none of those things in and of themselves have enough evidence behind them to support them being first line. They're really things we do when people either cannot tolerate or for some reason they have a side effect or they don't want to use a more traditional approach to treatment. Most of the time we're going to be using either a topical treatment, and the topical treatments are really the first line. So when a young person comes in and they have mild to moderate acne, so they might have a pretty good amount on their face. They might have mixed lesions where they have comedonal lesions and inflammatory. So that's interesting language. We know even comedonal lesions are inflammatory, but on the skin they don't really look it. Those are the ones that are the little blackheads and the little whiteheads. But even those lesions do have inflammation. But this person may have mild to moderate mixed acne with comedonal and inflammatory lesions. And most of the time, we're going to try to start out with topical treatment. And as I mentioned, the topical retinoid is the cornerstone, but we can add to that And I think a common thing we would add would be a combination of a benzoyl peroxide and a topical antibiotic. So those are nice products that work well together. We also have lots of oral therapies that patients can take, and the ones that we know the most about are the systemic antibiotics. In acne, we're going to rely heavily on minocycline and doxycycline, and there's not a lot of evidence to direct us to which one of those is more effective. Both of them are effective in acne, and one of the main reasons is because they're anti-inflammatory. Yes, they do kill P. acnes, which is important, but it's more important that they're anti-inflammatory. Now, according to the AAD guidelines for the management of acne, we need to try to limit the duration of these systemic antibiotics to like 3 to 4 months at a time. And that can be tricky because our patients take them and they get better, and then the patients don't want to stop them. And so we make a really big deal about you. When you write these antibiotics the first time, you need to set up the expectation from the beginning, from the very first visit, that these systemic antibiotics are not meant to be long-term therapy. We're going to use them. We are going to get you better. And by the way, we're going to use them most of the time in the presence of benzoyl peroxide, because those two together, if you add the benzoyl peroxide, it helps to develop less resistance to the antibiotic. But we're going to use those together. And at 3 or 4 months, we are going to stop them. And at 3 or 4 months, the person may not be perfect, but they should be significantly better. And then we have to start a maintenance treatment, because we all know that acne doesn't just go away in most people, especially during adolescence. There's two other groups of oral medications that I would mention as being very important. One is hormonal treatment, and those are treatments that we can really only use in our female patients. It doesn't just have to be in the adults. We can use these even in our adolescent patients, but they are combination birth control pills, four of which are FDA approved to treat acne. But most all of them will help as long as they're a combination of estrogen and a progestin. And then the other is spironolactone. And spironolactone is really a blood pressure medicine. It's a diuretic. It is not FDA approved to treat acne. But anecdotally, and it is included in the AAD guidelines, it's a medication that can be very beneficial in females who suffer from acne. The last category of oral medicine that, of course, we have to mention is isotretinoin. And isotretinoin is our big gun. It's a medication that I really love to use because it is always, always effective. And it's the product that gives people a chance to be cured of their acne. Most people take it for about 5 to 6 months, although what's most important is getting a total cumulative dose based on how much that person weighs. So you want to get to a total cumulative dose of between 120 and 150 milligrams per kilogram total dose, and then that's when you stop that drug. And when you do that, we have a chance, like an 80, 85% chance, that people will be cured of acne and that they won't need another course of something like isotretinoin. And many of them won't need any other treatment at all. So that really, you know, we've got our topical medications, retinoids, benzoyl peroxide, topical antibiotics. There are some other players in the topical arena that don't fit real squarely into any one of those categories. We also do have topical dapsone, which is really an anti-inflammatory. We also have topical azelaic acid, which is another topical anti-inflammatory. So those two have a little different mechanism of action. And then in the oral category, systemic antibiotics, hormonal treatments, and isotretinoin.
And you mentioned this briefly before. So it's possible for adults to present with acne as well. Are the etiologies and or treatment options different for adults versus adolescents?
We see lots of people who present to the clinic with acne who are in the adult years. There is a big gender difference here, and there's data to back this up. There's a lot more adult women who present with acne than there are adult males. The cutoff here between adolescent acne and adult acne can be a little tricky. We don't use 18 or 19. We use the number of about age 25. But we certainly see men and women, but far more women, who do present with acne in the adult years. It's a great question. Is the etiology the same? We debate that a great deal. As far as we know, yes, but there are so many things about, in particular, adult female acne that look different than adolescent acne. For example, if you envision that teenager who has acne, they have T-zone acne. So their forehead is bumpy, their nose has blackheads, their chin is broken out. That's not what we see when we see adult acne. Now, there's all kinds of different acne in adults, but there is a group of adult women who present with lower face acne. And it's not blackheads, it's not the comedonal lesions anymore. Now it's the deep inflammatory nodules that come in what we call the U zone. So instead of T zone in the adult patient, particularly the woman, it can be that U zone. Some people call it the muzzle distribution, but I don't think that's a very nice description here, but the U zone distribution. So because it looks different, it presents at a different time, it's skewed toward the female population, it makes me wonder if there's not something different in the pathophysiology here, but we don't have a definitive answer to that. We are left right now thinking the etiology is probably the same or very similar. And, you know, what's important about that is to effectively treat acne, we have to know what the etiology is. So we're always trying to take our treatments and target those four things that we mentioned earlier, which are inflammation, excess sebum, plugging of the follicle, and then propionibacterium acne. So we're just taking these different medicines, blending them together, and trying to hit those targets. And that would be true whether you're an adolescent or you're a 40-year-old woman.
And you kind of touched on it before, how the hormones with the birth control might play a role. What role does nutrition play in treating acne?
Nutrition and acne is another hot topic, and it's one we don't have great answers for. It's hard to do a great prospective study that really evaluates diet and acne. It's hard to totally control somebody's food intake, and then how long would the study have to be to really adequately assess that diet's effect on acne. But I'll tell you that to date, the best data that we have does look like those foods that are high glycemic load foods may in fact trigger acne. And so if you're going to do any counseling with a patient, that would be where I think you could target. And why do they do that? It may be because they increase insulin-like growth factor 1. Insulin-like growth factor 1 can worsen and trigger acne, so it may be through that mechanism of action.
And in your opinion, are there any unmet educational needs in this area for primary care providers? And if so, what key takeaways would you have for our listeners today?
Well, I would have several key takeaways. One would be we're really, really focusing on being good stewards of our antibiotics. So I think a key learning point is, number one, don't prescribe antibiotics as monotherapy in acne. And so even though it's tempting to just write that antibiotic, and by the way, it probably would help, you need to, if you're going to write an antibiotic, co-prescribe a benzoyl peroxide of some kind. And we do prefer the leave-on benzoyl peroxides more than a wash, but a wash is better than nothing. And so if that's what your option is, you can do that. So that's number one. And that is true whether it's an oral or a topical antibiotic. So also don't just write topical clindamycin by itself. That product needs to be used in combination with benzoyl peroxide. Number two, key learning in acne is that antibiotics need to be used for a shorter duration of time than we have done in the past. We really need to try to get down to that 3 or 4 month window and then stop them. And this is to dermatologists, this is to primary care. It's easy when the patient calls in and they request a refill of that antibiotic to just do it. But we really have to stop doing that just to be good stewards of these antibiotics. I think those are two of the biggies. Number three, and this is just an area of personal interest of mine, is utilize the hormonal therapies in women. They can be very, very effective. The only ones that are not helpful in acne that I can think of, and here I'm talking about birth control pills, if you use a birth control pill that is like a progestin-only mini pill, keep in mind that progestin products can act kind of like androgen, and they can make acne worse. And that's why we'll see occasionally an IUD that contains a progestin product in it make acne worse. So we've got to avoid those, but use those combination birth control pill products because they can really help acne, as can the spironolactone. When you're utilizing hormonal therapy for acne, it takes a little while to kick in. We've got good studies that show 3 months to really start to see a separation from placebo when you're looking at a birth control pill in the treatment of acne. It probably takes 6 cycles of that pill, maybe even 9 cycles of that pill to have its full effect.
Great. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Dr. Harper.
No problem. Thank you.